Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. Returning guest on the program with us today is Keith Neumeyer, and this is a perfect day to talk to Keith. Just for everybody listening, it's May 19th, and it seems like a breakout for silver is here, and who better to talk to than the head of First Majestic Silver, Keith Neumeyer. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Colin. It's great to hear your voice again. And you're right, it's a fantastic day. We've had two back-to-back days when silver is outperforming gold.
Yeah, it sure is nice, and hopefully a sign of things to come. You know, what's most shocking is looking at the silver stocks, and you can look at First Majestic, for example, up considerably, and that's in light of silver not moving that much. I mean, the silver to gold ratio is still way out of whack, and silver's nowhere close to where it was back in 2011, so it seems like the sky's the limit on this one.
Well, I think it was really the ratio that woke a lot of the big money up. You know, when the ratio broke through 100, which in itself was unprecedented, and, you know, gone all the way up to, I think, north of even 120. I didn't do the calculation today, but probably in the 110 range there, about approximately. But, you know, these are unprecedented ratios, you know, comparing the price of silver and the price of gold. And our phones have been ringing off the hook, you know, literally for a month now, about, you know, people looking at kicking the tires and big money, like big institutions, which is really interesting because we haven't seen, you know, the big generalists coming to the table for quite some time, and they're now finally coming back to the table.
Keith, it seems like the setup, just looking at the overall economy, obviously this has been sparked by the COVID virus, but all of these issues were already in place. The setup just seems perfect for precious metals. And if it's perfect for precious metals, of course, you know, silver, one would think, is going to benefit even more than gold. Talk to us about, you know, just what you're seeing, you know, in terms of the Fed policy and, you know, if it confirms kind of what you've been looking at for the past few years.
Yeah, look, there's a direct correlation. I think there's about a 90% correlation between interest rates. I mean, real interest rates, so not just actual, you know, interest rates, but real interest rates, inflation, including in that number, and its relationship with the gold prices. And we're already in, but it's going to get worse. You know, we're going to see interest rates go much lower. Well, it's hard to even imagine much lower interest rates when you're trading, you know, already at, you know, 1 or 2%, depending on which term you're looking at. Them in themselves are historically low, but the talk is negative interest rates. Trump has said he wants it. The Europeans just started talking about it again last week. One of these taboo discussions that no one wants to admit is going to happen. But you know, I think negative interest rates are in the cards in the United States, which is going to have all kinds of other ramifications, which, you know, we don't even have time today to address. And quite honestly, no one's really experienced it anyway, so we can speculate all we want. But one thing we do know is that as interest rates go lower, gold goes higher.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm going to put you on the spot here a bit. You know, it's my feeling that gold could easily go to $3,000 to $5,000. And I've heard some people quote numbers far, far higher than that. At some point, it doesn't really matter. But if gold does go to that level, what is your thought on where silver could potentially go?
Well, you know, the trading ratio and the mining ratio are unfortunately quite different numbers. You know, I'm a big supply demand fundamentalist, and I believe that anything should trade on its true supply demand fundamentals. Obviously, we've not been proven correct in the case of silver. But as a mining industry, which I run, the more well-known producing mining companies, First Majestic Silver, we as a global industry produce for every 1 ounce of gold being mined, only 8 ounces of silver. So, you know, how do you trade at 8 ounces of silver mine 8 ounces of silver when you're trading at something north of 100 ounces of silver on the ratio basis? So anyways, I just find, look, it got down to 31 in 2011, when silver hit $50, I'm sure we're going to see those types of ratios again. And I would suggest that we would even see a much lower ratio. I'm not sure if we're ever going to see 8 to 1, but we should. But that's another conversation as well altogether. You know, it's if we see 20, 25, 30 to 1, $5,000 gold, looking at, triple digits over.
Keith, I'm sure you were hearing some similar commentary to what I was catching back a couple months ago. Obviously, fear was at its peak and there was blood running in the streets. I heard certain precious metals analysts making claims that, gold might be okay, but I think silver's decoupled, it's dead, it's industrial, it's not going to have the investment demand. And of course, that happened to coincide right when that ratio hit kind of 1 to 120, like you said, unprecedented. Were you catching similar comments from people as well?
Well, I put First Majestic together 18 years ago. So, it's not the first time that comment has come to, the marketplace. And human beings always look backwards and see, they're trying to look for cause and effect. And yeah, for sure, silver is precious metal without a doubt, but it's also industrial metal. I even take it one step further. I call silver a strategic metal. And people have heard me say that. I've been saying it for over 4 or 5 years now. And I've heard other people call it the same. So why I say that is because everything that we do as a human race, we want silver. Well, we need silver. This call that we're having right now would not be possible without silver. All the gadgets that we use every day, automobiles, our transportation systems, our, aircraft, televisions, everything. From the moment, actually, even during our sleeping hours, silver is operating in the background in some way, shape, or form. And so it's a very strategic metal. Without silver and copper, quite honestly, but without silver, our lives would change for the worst, quite dramatically so. And it hasn't really been picked up by the marketplace. We saw a couple of years ago, we saw cobalt take off. We've seen other metals like, uranium a few years ago. And, more recently, we've seen, palladium take off as well. And these are caused by all of a sudden major retail demand coming into a specific marketplace, because all these markets are extremely tight. And I don't think investors quite honestly understand how tight these markets are. And silver has been in a deficit going back 30 years. And not every year it's been in a deficit, but there's been several years over that 30 years that the metal has actually dropped into a deficit situation. And as we want to go green as the human race, and, as we get off oil and gas, and as we do, all the things that we're doing to electrify the planet in much more green ways, we're going to need a lot more silver. And at $17 silver, which is where it's at today, which is, obviously very nice to see compared to what it was just a couple of months ago, we're not going to produce enough silver to meet the needs of the human race. And we need multi-digits, 3, 4, 5 times, 10 times what the current metal price is trading at to make it economic enough to get the silver into industry to change the way we do things from an electrification standpoint of view.
Keith, investors do seem, as you just pointed out, to cling to their most recent experiences. And for gold and silver investors, that is 2016 in a way. In 2016, we had the beginning of what seemed like a rip-roaring bull market in these mining stocks. First Majestic, for example, performed incredibly well during that time, and many other mining stocks did well. Do you feel like this time around the circumstances are more akin to, say, the move that started in 2008 or even 2001, which had, of course, much more longevity to them?
Well, that 2016 trade was quite a different animal. We were coming out of 2015, where things were not so great in the economy, and there was a view that we're going to get back into this inflationary mode globally from an economic perspective. And there was a bid that came in to the mining sector, copper, all silver, gold, everything was bid up. And it was just simply for the fact that people thought we're going to go back to 2010, 2011, 2012, where we had quite a rip-roaring economy after the big depression back in 08, 09. So no, I don't think that 2016 can be comparable. I look at this as more comparable to 1929 to 1933. In 29, we had major crash. Over the next year into 1930, we had a pretty aggressive rally that lasted about 6 months, very similar to the rally that we've had in the U.S. marketplace. And interestingly, if people outside the U.S. would look at what's going on in the international markets, they're not doing the same thing that the U.S. market is doing. So a lot of FOMO going on in the U.S. space. Everyone's trying to catch the bottom. Where's the bottom? I hear more people saying that is the bottom in, you know, I think the bottom's in, you know, we're back to the races again and so on and so forth. But in my view, that's not the case. I think we're going to take a, you know, probably a 2 to 3 year dip here. That's, you know, could we could see 30, 40, 50% erased from the major markets in the U.S. It's already happened in most everywhere else in the world. You look at the Asian markets or the European stock indexes, you know, they're all down quite dramatically. It's just, you know, U.S. seems to be just this unusual phenomenon whereby there's a direct relationship between how much money the Fed prints and the stock market. And of course, you know, the whole thing is related to tax collection and trade and so on and so forth. But I think this market is going to have some challenges, and that's going to be great for the gold sector with the constant or continuous money printing that we're seeing and the lowering interest rates. It's a fantastic, it's almost, you know, everything's coming together for us after, you know, waiting for the things that we've been talking about for close to, you know, 7 or 8 years are all happening right now in front of our eyes. And, you know, you mentioned $5,000 gold. Well, you know, I don't know where gold's going to end up. Could be three, it could be five. Silver could be 100, 150, who knows? But there's a lot of money to be made in this current environment. And this could last easily 3 to 5 years.
You are a prolific marketer, in my opinion, on your ability to get as many people exposed to the silver story in First Majestic. And I use this anecdote. I was speaking, we get Rick Rule on the radio show here often, and he will request that people send in their junior mining portfolio for him to give a review. I don't remember what the percentage was, but by far and away, more accounts held First Majestic Silver than any other mining stock out there. But that's really an anomaly. And if you look at how many people, how many investors actually own mining stocks in general, there's nobody in the trade at this point. The Robinhood platform, which puts this information out, there's only something like 24,000 out of 10 million accounts as of last week that own Barrick Gold, the biggest gold stock out there. So it seems like there's a huge amount of information or education, I should say, that needs to be given to the investment community, and a big trade left to happen. A lot of people still to jump in.
Yeah, you know, look, I've been in this industry or this market for 35 years and seen it. You know, I understand crowds, I understand human behavior, greed, and all those issues, and it's just the way we are, and I'm not sure if we're ever going to change that. But you know, unfortunately, people have to wake up and realize that the mining sector is very cyclical, and it goes through long periods of excitement and also long periods of bear markets that, you know, can destroy portfolios. The way I personally do things is I love buying stuff on sale. I love buying stuff when no one wants it. And I look personally for distressed assets and companies that are having challenges. And obviously, they have to have good assets, but they could have all kinds of other problems that you know, maybe I or my team can come in and maybe rectify and turn things around, and that's where I've made most of my money. And you know, I don't like to chase the market, but I'm at the same time, you have to be prepared to be wrong, and that's something people generally, investors generally, don't like to be. You know, and when I decide after a few months of due diligence on looking at a particular investment in the mining space, and I finally decide, okay, I'm going to start taking a position in it, I automatically expect to own it between 3 to 5 years. And I expect automatically to be wrong. If I'm wrong, if I'm down 50% on my position, that's okay to me, because that means I could just buy a lot more. So I always scale things in. I always scale things out. If you, you know, want to buy 10,000 shares in a particular stock that you really like, Do it in five transactions over a period of 6 months, and scale things back, you know, 10%, you know, per order, and just see what happens. And you know, quite interestingly enough, you end up getting filled a lot of times, and you end up owning that 10,000 shares at a pretty good average cost. And you know, when things do turn around, all of a sudden, you know, you make 100% or 200% on your investment just because you were patient.
Keith, I'm going to leave you with one last question. a lot of people know you today as a silver guy, if you will, obviously First Majestic Silver, but in the past founded First Quantum Copper, now the fifth or sixth largest primary copper producer, and you also have First Mining Finance, which is a gold-focused vehicle. My question is this, do you think precious metals are really the only place to be the next few years, or do you think that commodities in general are going to benefit off of Fed policy and just where the general equities are going?
Yeah, look, that's a pretty broad question. I am the chairman of First Mining Gold, which has a portfolio of really exciting gold assets in Eastern Ontario, which is trading at super cheap numbers, which I think people should look at. My only high tech investment is a company called Nano One, which is a battery company, which I've been a shareholder of for, 5, 6, 7 years now, and then pretty exciting what they're doing, but the stock has just been going kind of sideways. Most of my portfolio is in gold and silver, or silver and gold. Silver One's a big investment of mine. Of course, my core investments, being First Majestic and First Mining. I think that we're in a long bull market here. This is the time to be owning stuff. I would be avoiding the major markets. I've got nothing against the big companies, but this comes down to flows of capital, and the mining sector is extremely tiny. You look at the silver sector, for example. If you look at the total mining production of somewhere around 800 million ounces of silver produced annually, $17 silver, works out to what, $16 billion of silver gets produced annually. How many times can that fit into Apple's market cap, for example? It's just absolutely ridiculous how small the mining sector is. So if you time your investments correctly in the mining sector, you can do extremely well, because all that capital that was into the big stocks, even a small portion of that capital starts to come into the mining sector. And that's where, as you mentioned earlier in 2016, where you can get 300-500% gains in this sector, just because it's just a supply demand. There's only a limited amount of stock outstanding on First Majestic or any of the companies I own in my portfolio. So they, of course, they could issue more and they can do financings, all of that. But generally speaking, all of a sudden, you increase the demand in a particular mining stock by 10 times. What's going to happen to that stock? That's what's going to happen. Well, it's already starting to happen. And it's just, the question is, how long is it going to last? Is this a 6-year blip like what happened in 2016, or 6-month blip, which happened in 2016? Or is this something a lot more sustainable that's going to go, 3, 4, 5, or even maybe longer? My bet is that this is going to be a longer bull run, likely matching the one that went from 2002 to 2012, the 10-year run we had on the miners. I think this is going to be something similar to that. And it all comes down to just money printing and interest rates. The governments are absolutely, as your listeners know, as you know yourself, Colin, the governments here are intent on trying to float this economy with free money. And free money always translates into higher gold prices.
Well, Keith, congratulations on the beginning of this move. I think it has a lot longer to go, as obviously you do for silver. And, congrats on the validation. You've been a huge proponent of silver, and I think it's going to be an incredible, incredible place to be for the next few years. Thanks for coming back on the program and chatting with our listeners, and look forward to getting you back here sometime soon.
Yeah, and one day hopefully we can actually see each other face to face. I went to a restaurant last night for the first time in 2 months. They opened up, and we were one of their first customers, and it was quite an interesting experience being back in restaurants, and I'm looking forward to doing more of that.
Yeah, well, I envy you. I have not been to a restaurant for 2.5-3 months now. It's certainly strange.
Yes, it is.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?